and welcome to another episode of Convergence. As usual, I'm Ellen Taylor, sitting in the hot seat, along with my co-host, Michelle McAloon. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, and I'm sitting in the cold seat in Germany.
Yeah, so. I know. It's like winter there already, right?
It's colder. Yeah, it's colder here, so.
I think I got the better half of this deal. I'm just saying that right up front.
I think you do too, my friend. I do too.
We today want to bring in a special guest, and we like to look at the different areas of Catholicism, how they play out in, particularly in the news and social media content. And so we've explored some different websites with you, our listeners. And today we bring in a guest, Timothy Flanders. Timothy is the editor of 1 Peter 5. They're a Catholic website. And besides that great monumental project, which is, if you haven't been there, we encourage you to go visit their website. He's the author of City of God versus City of Man and Introduction to the Holy Bible for Traditional Catholics. So welcome in, Timothy.
Well, thanks so much for having me. Jesus is King.
I love
Jesus
that.
Jesus is King. That's that. Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Coming up on Christ the King Sunday. That's great. Yes. Yeah. Jesus is King. So, Timothy, what is 1 Peter 5?
Well, 1 Peter 5 says, resist the devil, and that your brethren are facing the same struggles throughout the world. That's the key verse from 1 Peter 5 that we take heart in that Catholics around the world are struggling with the same issues, and we suffer together. If one member suffers, we all suffer. If one member glories, we all glory. And so we are taking stock of the battle that we face as Catholics against the world, the flesh, and the devil, as it is in our own souls, but also in the church and in the society. And we're taking heart together as one Catholic body. And that's what 1 Peter 5 says in the Holy Scriptures.
Wow. I just got to say that that's not an approach the Jesus-loving world kind of usually leads us down. They're like, oh, everything's beautiful and everything's happy. And I guess being in the South here, we call it the gospel of prosperity. And sometimes we see the shiny, happy side, but you're kind of pulling back and showing us a picture of this depth of what we're called to do in our Catholic Christianity.
Yeah, 1 Peter 5 says, be sober, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experience of suffering is required of your brotherhood throughout the world.
And I tell you, what you're saying is absolutely right, because where you see traditional Catholicism around the world, it looks the same around the world. It is a traditional Catholicism that is growing. It is on fire, and it is growing. And it doesn't matter if it's in Europe, Africa, Asia, Australia, or the United States, that there is definitely a very kinship, a kindredness of this traditional Catholicism that is growing in people that are standing up for the battle. In starting 1 Peter 5, what was your goal to try to get out to the world?
Well, let me give credit to her. I'm actually not the founder. The founder is actually Steve Skojec, who founded it for the purpose of restoring Catholic tradition and culture. And so let me first start by explaining, if someone's not familiar with what traditional Catholicism is. Traditional Catholicism is essentially, the easiest way to explain it is if you go back to your great-great-grandfathers and what they were doing, thinking, and living in, you know, the 1930s, 40s, and 50s in general. Not always, but in a general sense, it's true that those people and what they were thinking is generally the thought of traditional Catholicism. And so essentially there's been a debate among Catholics since this modern epoch started, since we could start it with the French Revolution, for example. There's been a little bit of debate among Catholics, and it's really been, what do we do with modernity? What do we do with this modern liberal order that's been just created by the French Revolution and everything like that? And there's always been this sort of skeptical group of Catholics who would say, well, we're more realist. We're saying, hey, resist the devil, because there's demonic elements in this modern world and we should be really careful about them. And so we're kind of resisting them in general. And this was the thought of many popes, with a few minor exceptions, however. But there was the thought of many popes up to Pius XII in particular. So that's when I always say traditional Catholicism was generally taking a very skeptical stance towards the modern world. And this would be in contrast with what we might call liberal Catholics in the 19th century sense, which is a liberal Catholic is simply a Catholic who's saying, hey, we think there are certain good things about the modern world, which we can work with. And some of these things are not against the faith. And so we can work with them. And so it's a little bit more optimistic towards the modern world. So now, to be fair, in and of itself, those two positions are not Catholic or, you know, something between heresy and orthodoxy here. It is a little bit of a debate, and it's not entirely clear on certain matters. But the traditional Catholic perspective is generally skeptical of what the modern world has brought to history, and generally points to some of the downsides of modernity. And so we at 1 Peter 5, we are promoting Catholic tradition and culture. So for example, a very easy example for anyone to recognize is the proliferation of ugly churches, for example. And this is something that is a big problem. And it really began it was already happening in the 20s and 30s with industrialization. People were thinking it was very fashionable to make churches out of concrete and make them look more like machines than look like beautiful works of art, which raises our hearts and minds to God. And this fad became a real problem in the 1960s and 70s, where there was just a proliferation of this sort of uglification of church architecture. And so, unfortunately, you go into your average church that's been built in the past 50 years today, and unfortunately, it looks very modern. It's kind of just weird looking or ugly, and it's just more difficult to pray. It's less beautiful. It's less, you know, raises your mind to God. So that's just a very conspicuous example. And so at 1 Peter 5, we would promote the traditional Catholic aesthetics in terms of art, architecture, music, and those things, which are connected very intimately to the Catholic orthodoxy, the doctrine and the morals as well. So we promote Catholic beauty as part of this movement. So that's kind of an introduction to some of these aspects.
Kind of reminded me when you said great grandparents, reminded me of how the local Catholic grade school would have 1,200 kids in it. And that was normal. And every few blocks you'd have one of those because there was greater understanding and appreciation of Catholic education back then as well. And teaching your kids in Catholic school.
Yeah, it's a whole way of life, really. It's basically the question of modernity is how much can we be modern? That's been the question since 1800 for Catholics. And some Catholics have said, hey, we can be quite modern. We can have public schools. For example, Archbishop James Gibbons in the United States was promoting public schools as opposed to Catholic schools. Fortunately, he lost that battle. And we do have Catholic schools in the United States as a long legacy. But it's essentially, you know, like in the 1950s in the United States, I'm speaking as an American here, in the United States, there were these ethnic ghettos, for example, which we called them, which is where Catholics were living together in community to support one another. And that's a very sort of anti-modern way because we're all together. We've got, you know, a Corpus Christi procession down the street. We're going to shut down the streets, have this procession. Everybody's speaking Polish or German or whatever. Everybody's supporting each other. I got my aunts and uncles and cousins down the street. And this whole community, which is basically, we would call that Christendom. We would call that an aspect of Christendom, which is where it's not only my relationship with Christ in my soul. It's not just my family, but it's also the family of families and the parish structure, which is all working together. So it's a whole way of life. And that's really what Catholicism is meant to be. And that's kind of what traditional Catholicism is trying to give to the church is a remembrance of what your great-great-grandfathers had back in Bavaria, you know, when there was Christendom in Bavaria, for example, or in the ethnic ghettos of the United States, there were these communities. And that's what many people now today are very much open to restoring these different communities And so that's what traditional Catholicism is. It is an effort to Christianize society, to have this aspect of Christendom, which starts on the local level and just grows like a mustard seed as the kingdom of God.
Okay, but your traditional Catholicism is under fire like it's never been under fire before, especially because it's coming from the Vatican now. With the motu proprio, the letter put out by Pope Francis called Traditionis Custodis, which curtailed the use of the traditional Latin Mass, except in very exceptional circumstances, placing it under the absolute control of a bishop, but went too far, I think, by putting too many caveats on it. So where is traditional Catholicism now, especially after that motu proprio from Pope Francis, excuse me?
Well, where is traditional Catholicism? Well, it's growing in numbers, because now we not only have the argument that is essentially saying, you know, the Latin Mass, as it is codified in the 1962 Missal. So that's, again, what viewers or listeners, that's what your great-great-grandfathers and your great-great-great-great-grandfathers, they were all worshiping in the Latin. This is what formed and grew the traditional Catholic culture of North and South America, of the Philippines, of all of Europe, of course, into Asia, in Africa. This is all over the place. And it's always been really a bilingualism too, because it's not just the Latin Mass, but it's vernacular devotions put together. But there was always a big controversy when Paul VI wanted to suppress this Mass of our forefathers and impose a new Mass. You know, it would be one thing if you just wanted to introduce another option, that would be one thing. Okay. But then if you wanted to just suppress everything that came before, that was a big controversy at the time, even at among the Curia. But very few bishops at that time realized, or actually they realized it, but they were not willing to oppose it. And there was actually a priest, a famous priest in the 1970s, who opposed Paul VI, and his name was Joseph Ratzinger. And he publicly said, this is wrong. You can't break with, you know, you can't just impose this and suppress the old Mass. It's not right. And in the 1980s, he began to reverse that. And so there was a reintegration, a reallowance for the Latin Mass in 1984, again in 1988. And this just continued to grow in the church, and until 2007, when Pope Benedict released the Latin Mass from any restrictions so that any priest could simply say the Latin Mass, which is nothing less than the ancient Roman rite of our forefathers. And it was articulated by really the greatest Augustinian theologian of the 20th century, Joseph Ratzinger. And so this was something that was many, many Catholics just understood, even if they didn't go to the Latin Mass. Like, there's really no reason. Why would you just disallow, you know, what our great-great-grandfathers did? What is the problem with that? And this was articulated in many different ways by Joseph Ratzinger. And so he had these sympathies with the traditionalists who were advocating for this. Since the very beginning, there was a lay organization called Una Voce in 1964. And then there was also Archbishop Lefebvre. He had the SSPX. There was Bishop Antonio de Castro Mayor in Campos, Brazil. There was other bishops who were advocating for this, but they didn't have a lot of support except for this man named Joseph Ratzinger. And then he was elevated to such a high post by John Paul II that these ideas were able to gain much more prominence. And so there was a whole new liturgical movement that he was making to try to reconcile this problem with the Latin Mass. So trying to basically the long and short of it is, by doing this, Pope Francis has completely reversed the legacy of Joseph Ratzinger and these other traditional organizations, which had the same sympathies, that there was something wrong with the church undermining her own continuity with her own past. And this is something Cardinal Sarah has articulated since the motu proprio came out. Cardinal Serra is the greatest living expositor of Ratzinger's thought, as he was appointed by Ratzinger. And so this is just traditional Catholicism is essentially just saying that the church has continuity with her past and must continue to have continuity with her past, not only liturgically, but doctrinally and morally and aesthetically. And all of this really is the centerpiece is the Latin Mass. And so by doing this, Pope Francis has swelled the ranks of the traditional movement by adding more voices, because people can just, I can think of George Weigel. George Weigel is not a traditionalist. He even writes it. He wrote against it because he realizes that the church cannot just disallow its own past. It's basically undermining its own credibility. It's undermining its own continuity. So this has really united more and more people to this one traditionalist cause of at least the Latin Mass. Even if you don't go, you can still support this. So it's really been a great marketing. There was just a documentary released, one of three, called The Mass of the Ages, which is all about the Latin Mass. And it now has 1 million views. That was released right after the motu proprio. And this is what's being spread, and people are seeing it for what it is. And they are gathering together towards this just cause of just preserving the Mass of our forefathers.
We are speaking with Timothy Flanders. He is the editor of 1 Peter 5. Tim, I think people's perception in the pews in some ways is these are good, faithful Catholics, even if I don't go to the Latin Mass. So why, with all of the problems and the people and the studies that are coming about Catholics being fallen away from the church, why is the church not more interested in trying to go out and save those sheep that have wandered off, rather than picking on the people still in the herd, those that just prefer the traditionalist ways of celebrating the Mass and other elements in the culture and society? So it seems like the church has much bigger battles out there to be fighting, encounters they need to have in saving souls, than worrying about people that faithfully go to church every week. So the everyday person in the pew, even if they don't attend the Latin Mass, why is this going on?
Yeah, well, there's many aspects to it. On the one hand, we have to be fair that as there are with any group, there are extremists in any particular group. So the motu proprio makes mention of basically these extremists and says, oh, these people are just sort of being excessive with their ecclesiology or their acceptance of Vatican II, et cetera, et cetera. So therefore, we're going to clamp down on everything. But that's not really pastoral at all. That's not focusing on dialogue or mercy. If there is actually a problem anywhere, you know, can we not resolve that with dialogue? That, you know, the Vatican has a dialogue with the Jews, with the Muslims, Hindus, who else, but not just their own Catholic faithful who are just want to worship the way that their forefathers did. And studies show that, you know, these Catholics are, they're Orthodox. They believe in the doctrines of the church. And so they're trying to be faithful. And the bottom line is that most of these families have just experienced God. They've experienced Christ in the Latin Mass. They've had a moment of prayer, a moment of beauty with God that they want to hold on to in a world of noise. And that's just it. That's the basics. Now, why is the church after this group? Well, there are different factions in the Vatican. Again, Joseph Ratzinger pointed out that one of the reasons that people did not like the Latin Mass was that there was a big group of Catholic so-called theologians who basically wanted to discredit the Council of Trent. And they wanted to become Lutherans, basically. They wanted to say, well, Martin Luther was right about the Mass. It's not a sacrifice. Martin Luther was right about transubstantiation. And so they actually wanted to suppress the Latin Mass because they were basically promoting heresy. And because the Latin Mass is very much celebrated and codified and passed down against certain Protestant heresies. And so there is this contingent to basically make the Mass as Protestant-friendly as possible. There's an Italian liturgist by the name of Andrea Grillo, and he and his followers launched a petition against the Latin Mass 2 years ago, which was in response to Pope Francis allowing for some of what Ratzinger had called mutual enrichment, which was where the Latin Mass was being updated with newer saints. And Grillo and his followers, they just did not like this whole continuity with the past. It was offensive to Protestants. It was offensive to their ideas about remaking the Catholic faith into the image of sort of a non-governmental organization or whatever they wanted to make it. And so they launched this petition, and apparently they have enough sympathizers in the Vatican to be able to convince the Holy Father to do such a thing as this. So essentially, for some, the Latin Mass is just too Catholic. I am sorry to say, but there are enemies in the church who just don't really want to be Catholic. They want to be Protestant. They want to be Lutheran, but they don't want to leave the church and go join the Lutherans. They want to change the church from the within, and that's why the Latin Mass is so offensive to them. And this is an unfortunate reality, but that is what is driving a great deal of this effort to stamp out the Latin Mass.
You know, what's so ironic about it is that the Catholic Church has five or six different separate rites, and these rites are Syrian, the Ambrose, the Ambrosian Mass, the Malo-Syrian. So there's a numerous rites within the Church. History will prove these people wrong who've said that the Latin Mass cannot exist, because if you look to the past, we have had different rites. We have a Roman Catholic rite. We can have a traditional rite. We can have these different rites. So I really believe that the men and maybe even women who decided to suppress or try to reduce the traditional Latin Mass are on the wrong side of history, and they're on the wrong side of the hermeneutics of the Catholic Church. And that with a new pope, this will evolve out again, because once again, it, like you said, it is the people and the people's heart and the people's desire to have this Mass. And guess what? The church, any huge movement that has ever happened in the church has not been a top-down movement. It has been a layperson, lay-up movement. So I think we're in a very fascinating crossroad of history, and maybe Pope Francis did us a favor by allowing us to recognize ourselves as who we are and who we want to be as traditionalists.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with everything you said. This is definitely, we can compare the way the church responded in 1969 or 1970 when the Latin Mass was first sort of suppressed in some way de facto. There was very few bishops, as we said. Now there's just been a book published, which is called From Benedict's Peace to Francis's War. And it's all about the responses to the motu proprio. And that includes five cardinals and five bishops besides priests and laity who are all against this for various reasons. Some of them, like I said, they're more sort of trad, you might say, or some of more are sort of the Ratzingerian type viewpoint, but they're both in agreement that the church cannot just disallow its own past. The church undermines itself, and the movement of this restoration, this continuity is growing, and it's grown since the 1960s, and it's a lot stronger than it was then. And so we're in a much better place. And ultimately, this is just faithful Catholics and lay people working together to be faithful and pass down the faith.
I also heard a lot that when we were looking at some of the church attendance issues coming out of COVID, or we're still in, that the mass numbers went up during that time. Some areas bigger and some areas smaller than others. But just this sense of coming back home, or maybe they were the only churches that were open and in many places too. So it's interesting that these forces in culture are also kind of impacting what's going on in the traditional church.
The initial indult allowance for the Latin Mass came actually from non-Catholics, 1971. It was a bunch of non-Catholics who petitioned Paul VI to save the Latin Mass. So this is recognized even by non-Catholics. This is just a cultural treasure, if you want to look at it that way. we just need to preserve it.
Well, very interesting. Your 1 Peter 5 is really interesting, and it's good. Your blogs on it are really, they're good for explaining a lot of what is going on. It's deep thinking, but it shows how this is being played out through the universal church. So I really encourage listeners to go to 1 Peter 5, a great apologetics on that site.
Is it .org or .net? Oh, .com.
Oh, it's .com, and it's all spelled out. The numbers are spelled out, O-N-E, 1peter5.com. Yes.
Well, we encourage everybody to go there. There's a deep richness in our Catholic faith that maybe you're not experiencing where you are locally, but it's out there to uncover and absorb. And people are definitely making sure that the traditions of the Catholic faith continue and that we as Catholic laity understand them and that we can incorporate them into our lives. I think that that's really important. So, Timothy Flanders, thank you for joining us today. It's always great to have these conversations, and we look forward to seeing what good things you're going to do on the website as well.
Thanks. I really appreciate your time. Thanks Great. A lot for what you do.
Okay, Michelle. So you're wrapping up things. You're going to go to find a traditional Latin Mass in Germany if they allow it.
They do. They do have one here. And really what we've seen in Germany are the traditional Catholics are now carrying the faith here in a very beleaguered area at this point in time. So
and that's a conversation for a whole nother show, too. Thanks, Timothy, for joining us. For Michelle McAloon, I am Ellen Taylor. We thank you for listening to Convergence, and this is a courtesy of Archangel Radio. God bless you all. Have a great day.